You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
No news on the Buffett rule. Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you and occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. The media, of course, all concerned about Ann Romney, whether or not she's a working mom. And, you know, there's a whole series of real problems out there that the media is not talking about. Instead, they're talking about $600,000 being spent by the GAO and whatever government agency, they spent $600,000, and whether the Secret Service agents who were protecting the president down in South America, whether they were hooking up with prostitutes, right? This is the big issue that everybody's focusing on. What about some real problems? What about the $1.3 trillion we've spent on a decade of war in Iraq and Afghanistan? What about the $2.3 trillion that the Pentagon can't find? It's just gone missing. $2.3 trillion. What about the $80 billion for the Bush tax cuts for the rich? How about Wall Street's theft of $7 trillion during the economic meltdown? What about the $40 billion that every decade is lost to the oil companies by our giving them subsidies? And those are the direct subsidies, the tax cuts as subsidies. That's not to mention the subsidies that we give them by protecting their shipping lanes with our military, which is, you know, a massive chunk, about half of our total federal budget. And all the cancers and asthmas and other diseases that people get that we pay for, whether it's through our health insurance premiums or whether it's through Medicare and Medicaid. Oil companies don't pay a penny of that, nor do the coal companies. What about the $2.5 trillion in wealth sucked out of our economy over the last 30 years thanks to so-called free trade? Anybody talking about that on the corporate media? The corporate media owned by big corporations that themselves engage in free trade, in quotes, in other divisions? What about the trillions of dollars that three Republican presidents, Reagan, Bush, and Bush, added to our national debt? How about that? What about the $2 trillion of infrastructure debt since Republicans so-called starved the beast of government in the 1980s? What about the $2 trillion in damage that's been done to our oceans from climate change? And with more to come. We have a multi-hundred billion dollar, a series of them, and several trillion-dollar problems facing this country. And, you know, probably our infrastructure deficit, $2 trillion. Problems that require our immediate attention. And so what are our politicians, what's the corporate media all focused on right now? The GSA, I called it GAO, the GSA spending $600,000. That's right. Forget about the $2.3 trillion missing from the Pentagon. Let's talk about the $800,000 missing from the GSA. Or let's talk about Secret Service agents getting it on with hookers. You know, Matt Drudge has been the assignment editor for our corporate media for over a decade. It's time to wake up from it. The corporate media doesn't really want to talk about the real problems because, yeah, my dear, corporate profits. War profiteers lose if people are focused on the trillions missing in the Pentagon budget. Oil barons lose if people are focused on the trillions in taxpayer oil subsidies. Banksters lose if people are focused on the $7 trillion theft from the middle class. Millionaires and billionaires lose, you know, the Romney class, if people are focused on the money wasted due to the Bush tax cuts or the Romney tax cuts that he wants to put forward. Republicans lose if people are focused on exactly which party ran up most of our debt. When was the last time you heard that mentioned? That three Republican presidents ran up most of the debt we have right now. And no Republican was out there shouting about it, or at least no high-profile Republican. The media should be reporting on the real problems facing this nation and not the manufactured ones brought to us by Republican political operatives. For example, this is mind-boggling. We just learned, they, you know, it's tax season, and so they're filing the tax things. Karl Rove's organization. He doesn't name who gives him money, but he has to name how much money came through because it's, you know, a tax thing. We just found out that last year an anonymous donor gave Karl Rove's Crossroads Super PAC a $10 million donation to run ads against President Obama. One person or one corporation. We don't know. Thanks to the Supreme Court's Citizens United decision and the Wild West nature of political spending now, that $10 million donor will likely remain completely anonymous. We probably won't ever know who it is. Back during the 2010 midterm elections, there was another anonymous donor who also gave $10 million to Rove. Might have been the same person, since that was, you know, the year before. So one person dishing out $20 million to Karl Rove over a two-year period to help elect Mitt Romney and other Republicans. Could be somebody like Charles Koch. Could be a corporation like Goldman Sachs. Could be a special interest group like multimillionaire lobbyist Grover Norquist's Americans for Tax Reform. We just don't know. But I'm hearing a lot of things around Washington, D.C. these days as to who that donor might be. Let's just say some people are saying things. Of course, in real journalism, you actually quote sources or you make statements of facts. That's what real news does. But there's this really neat technique that Fox News has pioneered. And if you go to outfoxed.org, you can actually hear a clip of about 30 different Fox News commentators saying, people are saying, people are saying, people are saying, people are saying, all these different people are saying, where you insert your own opinion instead of news. Most people don't realize this is something no real news organization would ever do. It's called the some people say technique. Now, Fox so-called news isn't really a news organization, so they can get away with this. And this show isn't a news organization. It's my opinion. I don't even try to disguise it with something like the word news. To the extent that I say on the news, it's like my opinion on the news, but that's it. So let me tell you what some people are saying here in Washington, D.C. Some people are saying that Karl Rove's $10 million anonymous donation came from Iran's president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, a strongly Shia Muslim who's president of one of the few Shia-run states in the Middle East. Some people are saying that Ahmadinejad's a huge admirer of Karl Rove and a big supporter of the Republican Party. Why? Because George W. Bush decided to bomb Sunni Iraq, not Shia Iran, giving Shia Ahmadinejad a heck of a lot more influence in the Middle East and taking out Sunni Saddam Hussein, Iran's biggest enemy, against whom they had fought a multi-year war that cost them both billions of dollars and killed over a million people. So some people are saying that the $10 million gift to Rove is payback from Shia Iran for all the great things Rove and Bush did for them against Sunni Muslims. In addition, some people are saying the $10 million donation to Karl Rove has strings attached, that if Romney wins, if the Republicans take the Senate, then all those sanctions President Obama put on Shia Iran would immediately be lifted. We might even go after another Sunni-run country that Iran doesn't like, just like Bush took out Sunni-run Iraq and flipped it over to Shia rule. And some people are saying that all the aggressive bomb Iran talk coming from Mitt Romney was just a show. Behind closed doors, Mitt and Mahmoud are best buds. Not only that, I heard some people in Washington, D.C. say that Ahmadinejad only put up half the $10 million, that the other half came from North Korea's Kim Jong-un. Some people are saying that unlike his father, Kim Jong-un wants to have closer ties with the United States, but only if Rove's Republicans are elected. They can get a better weapons deal from the Republicans, just like Reagan gave Iran all those weapons during the Iran-Contra affair. Remember that? Republicans are really big on giving weapons to our enemies. In fact, I heard someone say just this afternoon that as we speak, Kim Jong-un is holding fundraisers for Mitt Romney and Karl Rove in North Korea. Plans to send dozens of fat checks stateside to front group American corporations in the coming weeks. Some people say that could be enough for Rove to buy Romney our election. Who knows? Some people are saying it.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
What are you saying? What are your thoughts on this? Ed, there's much more. Mitt Romney and taxes and his wife. Fascinating stuff.
Haven't you heard the rumors?
Remarkable, kind of smaller things in the news today. The Mitt Romney has come out and in the debates said, you know, one of the very first things he's going to do is veto the DREAM Act, or he would put it out of business, or he opposes. It's actually not a law yet, right? It's, I mean, you know, the Democrats have proposed this thing. And the DREAM Act basically says that if you were brought to the United States as a child without your consent, knowledge, or, if 3-year-olds don't say, hey, I want to go to America from, you know, fill in the blank. I mean, it could be from France or it could be from Mexico. If you were brought to the United States as a child, you grew up here, you think of yourself as an American, you go to American schools, we're going to provide, and you want to go to college and things like that, we will provide a more rapid path to citizenship for you as a child who grew up here, basically, than we will to somebody who's just knocking on the door. Or, for that matter, than we will to your parents who came here illegally intentionally. That's the DREAM Act in sort of crummy synopsis form. So now Mitt Romney comes out and says, well, you know, Republicans need Hispanic votes. We have to come up with our own version of the DREAM Act. And so Marco Rubio, the senator from Florida, is working on one, although his will not include citizenship. So it's a dream of what? I don't know. We'll see. For our listeners in Illinois, if you happen to be in the district represented by the crazy guy, I was going to say the highly esteemed Republican Joe Walsh, but I don't know how to say it. Joe Walsh is crazy. Sounds like it's like shorthand for a slur, I guess. Deadbeat Dad. That's a good one, Jacob. Yeah. Okay. Joe Walsh. That's right. He owns $100,000 in child support, doesn't he? So anyhow, last weekend, his opponent, Tammy Duckworth, the Democrat who lost two legs on the battlefield in Iraq, she was in a helicopter that got shot down, lost two legs, injured her arm. I met her at a fundraiser I attended in Chicago a month or so ago. And, very nice woman. And, you know, she has certainly demonstrated over the years her knowledge of politics, and she served her country admirably. She's still a member of the reserves, and she still has to do weekend gigs. And she had to do a weekend gig last weekend. And this is no secret. And so, the week before that, Joe Walsh sent out a thing to all of his supporters saying that he had challenged her to a debate on that weekend when she's serving in the military and can't show up. You get this now? You follow this storyline here? A Republican member of Congress who doesn't pay his child support is using a wounded veteran's military service against her. And when this was pointed out, and in fact the Duckworth campaign asked him to apologize for the stunt, he doubled down on it. He said, and I quote, "What else has she done? Female, wounded veteran? She's nothing more than a hand-picked Washington bureaucrat. Wearing the uniform should immediately earn everyone's respect. It should not, however, earn everyone's vote," he said earlier this month. Read it over at the blog at thinkprogress.org. It's amazing. Mitt Romney, in his book No Apology, he's not apologizing for demanding that poor mothers work. Now, I thought it was amazing. On Stephanie Miller's show last week, a woman who represented herself as, and did so quite well, I consider it a fairly credible assertion, as Ann Romney's nanny when Ann was younger, before she married Mitt. This is the woman who raised Ann. African-American woman called into the program, talked about Ann and her two brothers and how she, you know, the horse she had. And, you know, she did the cooking and the cleaning and all this kind of stuff. She was the maid for Ann. And then, of course, Ann went on to have her own maids and chefs and all those things. I mean, that comes along with being married to a guy worth $250 million. And Mitt, in his book, he's like, you know, when moms don't work, right? He says, it conditions the children of non-working parents to an indolent and unproductive life. Right. So, you know, I still don't get why Hillary Rosen is getting all this flack from the Republican Party. You know, she made the horrible, politically incorrect mistake of saying Ann Romney never worked a day in her life. And then everybody says, being a mom is work. Well, it is. And Democrats, since the New Deal, literally since the New Deal, Democrats have been proposing that moms, because it is hard work and it's unpaid hard work, should get things like full Social Security benefits. They only get half of whatever their husband gets. And if he dies, they only get half. That there should be some recognition of the work that moms do, stay-at-home moms do. And Republicans have fought it ever since 1935. They still fight it. So why are they so hysterical about saying, you know, this whole Hillary Rosen, Ann Romney thing? It baffles me. By the way, Mitt Romney's dad was the head of the Housing and Department of Housing and Urban Development. They're the ones who do the Section 8 vouchers. They, you know, if you're poor and you don't have a place to live, they get you a place to live. He wants to do away with the program that his dad used to head. This is not the apple that fell off the tree.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
This is the apple that fell off the tree and rolled way down the hill into the storm drain and then down into the sewer. Did I mention that the manufacturers of Twinkies, Hostess, their final offer to the union, this is the Teamsters represent the workers there. First of all, this is the company that, as they were going into bankruptcy, gave 80% bonuses and salaries, millions of dollars to their senior executives, and slashed money, income, to their workers. And now they want the workers to take a 75% cut in their pensions. The Teamsters are saying, no way. The bankruptcy judge, though, may just bust the union. May just say, that's it. You guys are gone. Absolutely incredible. It's amazing. And the Gallup started their national tracking polls today. Or maybe it was last night. The results are out today. Romney's beating Obama by 2 points in the national tracking poll. 90% of Republicans are voting for Romney. 90% of Democrats are voting for Obama. But among the so-called independent voters, people I refer to as low-information voters, it's Romney 45 or 49 versus Obama 35. Let me get the TPM has the article here. And where did it go? Here we go. No, that isn't it. Ah, yeah, 45 to 39. So my memory still functions. John in Santa Cruz, California. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
Well, let me take. Hello?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I live here in progressive Santa Cruz, and people here are saying that we don't really believe that right-wing Republican voters exist because we don't see them. We don't talk to them. So we think that they're probably a creation of Fox News.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you they do exist. Yeah, I go back to Michigan, visit my brothers, and I meet them all the time. There's a lot of them out there. There's amazingly a lot of them out there. Homer in L.A. Hey, Homer, what's up?
Hey, question for you, Tom. Speaking of brothers, you're not related to Phil Hartman, are you?
No.
Oh, it's too bad. He was good.
Yeah, he was. He spelled his name with one N.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant. My question to you is, there was an article in The New Yorker about Seymour Hersh. Written by Seymour Hersh. Apparently, the Obama administration is leaking Israeli secrets to Iran. Are you familiar with this?
No, I'm not. I'm sorry, I don't know any of the details of that, so I can't speak to it. Phil in Gainesville, Florida. Hey, Phil, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I wanted to comment on Mitt Romney's promise to veto the DREAM Act.
Yeah.
Tom, I've been working with migrant farm workers for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and it's just amazing to me that the Republicans want to veto an act that would help hardworking immigrant children to become contributing members of our society. And I hear from businesses all the time that they're in desperate need of an educated legal workforce. And here we pay to educate these children through high school. Some of them are valedictorians. And all the DREAM Act does doesn't provide any financial aid or in-state tuition. All it does is allow them to adjust their status.
Right, so that they can go to college.
I know several of them have been here for 22, 23 years. They just happened to be born in another country and were brought over here. And all he's doing is punishing the actions of the parents.
Yeah,
it's just so frustrating.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And frankly, I think this is the Republicans get it too, and it's one of the reasons why the Romney camp is saying they need to come up with a Republican version of it. But they can't give citizenship, so maybe they'll just say, yeah, you can go to college, and then you can live with the sword of Damocles hanging over you. I mean, that's what they're all about. Josh in Rock Springs, Wyoming. Hey, Josh, what's up?
Yeah, hey, Tom.
You got a lot of Republicans around you.
Oh yeah, it's a very conservative state, unfortunately. Yeah, Tom. When I'm an 18-year-old college kid, and I just wanted to say that your show is great. You certainly give me a lot of information.
But my
question to you today, Tom, is why did these people, these Republican voters, let themselves be so influenced by these people. So, back in the 80s when Reagan was first ran, why do you think people are so manipulated by these people?
Well, I think because it's fairly easy. Josh, thanks for the call. There's a couple of factors that you need to consider. One is that people like Frank Luntz are masters at massaging the message so it's simple and it can work as a bumper sticker. Death tax instead of inheritance tax. Tax cuts rather than tax cuts for the billionaires and tax increases. Reagan actually raised taxes on working people, cut taxes on billionaires. You'd never know it, though. Right? So they're very, very, very good at messaging, and they don't care if they lie. I mean, Mitt Romney, we did an entire half hour on this a week or so ago. Of all, just a series of just bald-faced lies that Romney has already told about the Obama administration, President Obama, and legislation that has passed, that he's already told. In fact, they've got an ad over at on Obama's website that just pushes back, just says has Romney's lie, and then has Obama's original statement that Romney was lying about. And it's not just Romney and Obama. I mean, not to take it out of that realm. This is something that. The problem that Republicans have, and they've had it since the 1880s, is in the entire 19th century, you had one Democratic president, right, Grover Cleveland. But the problem that the Republicans have had basically since the Grover Cleveland presidency is that they are in the bag for the wealthy and the powerful. Ever since they were taken over by the railroad barons in the 1880s, and then Carnegie and Rockefeller and Morgan and whatnot, they've basically been the party of the rich and powerful all the for a century and a half. How do you sell that? Well, you do two things. One, you pick up a whole bunch of fringe groups. George W. Bush's job when he was working on his daddy's campaign back in, what was that, 1988? Yeah, 1988, his father, George Herbert Walker Bush's campaign. George W.'s job was to bring in the evangelical vote. Now, his father didn't like talking about religion. He was one of these very conservative, uptight, religious, not even religiously conservative, just kind of quiet New England religious Christians, but, I'm not sure what religion he is. I think he's Presbyterian, but whatever it was, he just didn't like talking about religion. So he got a son to bring these people in, and thus was born. Right? I mean, it started really during the Reagan administration with Jerry Falwell and all these other guys, but thus was born this affiliation with the religious. And then they bring in the gut nuts, and then they bring in the racists. Now, that goes back to Nixon. Nixon had his southern strategy, brought in the racist vote. And, after Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act. And so you bring in all these various fringe groups, and they all add up to 10, 20, 30%. You get them all collected together. That's part of your party. And then you just tell lies. You know about who you are and what you're going to do. I don't know of any Republican policies. I may be wrong on this. I mean, feel free to call and correct me if you can think of one that actually benefit most of the people, as opposed to simply benefiting the elite few and the wealthy and the powerful and the corporations. And so, you know, if that's the platform you're running on, you can't be honest about it. And so that's what the Republicans do. John in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I love the show. I'm just going to – I see you got that lovely weather in Washington. We got lovely weather here in Columbus. So I'm just going to crack this cold one for you because I love the show, and I hope you okay. That's the cold one for you, my friend. You know,
thank you, John. What's up?
I just want to get back to that. The little private, you talking about the little private donors giving the money to all these politicians.
$10 million to Karl Rove. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, I heard you say, to me, I'm like, even if they do give out the names, it really doesn't matter because we all know it's nothing but billionaires and people like that who are setting the rules and the corporations and all that. No matter what they do. They're gonna keep giving money because the businesses are getting big and the little people are getting poor. And we all know out here because people are struggling every day. Yeah. I mean, I went to the library today, Tom, right? Everybody goes to the library around here to get the last little bit of taxes going on.
Those libraries that the Republicans want to shut down?
Yeah, right. And I'm just looking like, wow. And I see this guy in there, this Republican guy, and he's in there with these little flyers saying, oh, Obama's doing this, Obama's doing that. And it's amazing to me how me and this guy, we weren't arguing, we was just going at it, and I was talking about your show.
Mm-hmm.
And you should have heard the stuff he said about you, Tom. It was amazing.
Oh, good.
I can't even repeat it on TV, on the phone, but he don't like it. But anyway, about the giving him the money,
uh-huh.
I mean, I wish it was back in the days where, you know, you can – square it up, y'all duke it out, debate, and then let the people vote. But now it ain't like that. So I mean, no matter what, I'm hoping Obama gets in there again. But I keep telling my wife it's gonna be a fight for him. It's
oh, it is. It already is. As I said, the first Gallup poll out has Romney 2 points ahead of Obama right now.
Right.
And you know, in large part that might be because Karl Rove has been spending money running anti-Obama ads for months. I mean, you know, the campaign hasn't even started. And the Republican primary that got millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, arguably billions of dollars worth of free coverage, because everybody watched it, it was on all the networks, and all these Republicans did is they stood up there and they attacked Obama and made all these anti-Obama talking points, many of which were just false. You know, they just pulled stuff out of the thin air, or they lied, or they distorted things. And, of course, everybody on stage is, yep, yeah, he's cut in half a billion, $500 billion out of Medicare. First president ever did. No, he didn't do that at all. You know, it's these made up things. John, thanks for the call. And thanks for watching Free Speech TV there in Columbus. We'll be back 45 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. We'll be right back 45 minutes past the hour. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you, defending America from the weapons of mass deception. Raymond in Hemp Hill, Texas. Hey, Raymond, what's up?
Oh, how you doing, Tom?
Great. What's on your mind?
I had a question for you. It's about the gap between the rich and poor.
Mm-hmm.
What about just a basically going like with the Republicans? It's up there. Limited government, limited for corporations, not for the common man, but a limited government for the common man where you don't have, the income tax and all is fairly simplified. And at a point where anyone could give, anyone who's tried and could get rich could, but at some point put a cap where you have 100% or over a certain point, might be
right.
10 million, from, 20 from, million, 100 million, whatever.
Yeah, from 1936 or thereabouts, in the mid-30s until 1983, you had a top tax rate of either 91%, and that stood until 64, and then 74% until Reagan came along. And
yeah,
what that did, and that was on after you make about, in today's money, about $1 million. And the effect of that was that people would make their first $1 million, and then they would stop taking income. They would keep it in their business, and they would hire more people. They'd put the money into marketing, R&D.
But I doubt if it's going to happen.
Yeah, no, it worked very, very well. And thank you, Raymond, for the call. It also prevented these cycles of boom and bust that come along with very, very low taxes on very rich people, which gives them a lot of hot money to gamble with. And I've ranted on that lots and lots of times in the past, so I'm not going to go off on it again. Dave in Minneapolis, listening on AM 950. Hey, Dave, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I'm jealous for that guy in Santa Cruz. Maybe I should move down there.
What, surrounded by progressives?
Yes. I could show him many, many very conservative people, people who are just off the end of the charts loony. And I see hundreds of very, very rude Republican bumper stickers in the course of my daily life.
Yeah.
Also, the Upper Peninsula of I was going to say that part of the reason why is because a lot of these guys all go to these mega churches, and they all kind of share the same conservative, not just theological, but political views inside of those.
Right.
And then the whole Upper Peninsula of Michigan is one big hotbed of loony conservatism, too. And I noticed that they get Fox News on their cable TV, but they don't get anything on the left end of the spectrum to balance it out.
Yeah, this is nationwide, I believe, that on primary cable, basically, it's Fox and MSNBC are the two kind of political channels, and MSNBC is a premium channel, so you have to buy a more expensive cable package to get it in pretty much every place, I believe, and whereas Fox has always been basic cable, Rupert Murdoch has always been willing to make a little less money to get a larger market share. And it's been a very, very good marketing strategy for him, so he's been willing to do it. So you think that is
propaganda?
Yeah, that is brainwashing people. I think that you're right. I think that has a lot to do with it. Thanks a lot for the call, Dave. Paul in Irvine, California. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how's the new time slot treating you?
It is great. It is great. We're having a good time.
That's good to hear. I'm very amused actually right now how Romney and his wife are really milking the Hillary Rosen thing. Because they're still 20 points behind the president and with women, and as far as Latinos goes, I don't think Romney can even fake it with Latino voters, because I remember this scene in Ghostbusters 2 where Bill Murray tells the mayor, you know, I'm a voter, aren't you supposed to lie to me, kiss my butt? But I don't think Romney's even doing that. He's just not a very good speechmaker, you know.
Yeah, but I wouldn't keep in mind, as I said, the Gallup poll just came out, the very first daily tracking poll. He's 2 points ahead of Obama right now, number one. And
okay. And
it's almost entirely the low information, also known as independent voters, so people who are not paying attention. They're leaning toward Romney. And okay. and frankly, I think that's because, you know, Karl Rove and the Chamber of Commerce and these other right-wing groups have already spent millions of dollars trashing Obama, and the entire Republican primary was spent trashing Obama. So, number one. That's enough. Oh, and number two, the whole Hillary Rosen thing. One of the things I thought was interesting is that Ann Romney came out and said that this was the greatest birthday gift she could have had or something like that, you know, that this was just a gift to her, made her day. And,
laying it on pretty thick, aren't they?
Yeah. In other words, it's just, you know, yeah, we're going to use this for political purposes. Paul, thanks a lot for the call. It's really kind of sad, frankly. Steve in Richmond, Virginia. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Listen, this concerns the bit that this whole topic about moms, stay-at-home moms.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, my comment is basically to put a plug in for dads. I mean, I'm a stay-at-home dad, at least.
Oh, good on you.
Yeah, 2 or 3 days a week, as much as we can afford, you know,
mm-hmm.
And it just seems like with all this debate, it's like it really feels like both sides, both the liberals and the conservatives, are sort of ignoring the fact that stay-at-home dads exist. I mean, I understand we're a small minority, you know, but it seems really kind of unfair. I mean, there are dads out there. We're here, you know, I understand the conservatives because they're just trying to reinforce ridiculous, antiquated gender roles, you know.
Yeah.
But sometimes I get a little disappointed, you know, that a lot of progressives sort of ignore us, too.
It's I think that where the progressives have taken this, and I think that the frame that it needs to be put in, and that I tried to put it in earlier, is that parenting is work, whether it's mom or dad doing the parenting. Parenting is work. And ever since the 30s, when Social Security was first put into place, you know, it started out, and I don't know if it started out this way, but within the first decade or so, the way it is now is that the working parent earns Social Security benefits throughout their life. The non-working, the stay-at-home, being a parent, doesn't. And if the working parent dies, the other parent gets half the benefits, right? Instead of getting half the benefits, why don't they get full benefits? Because the Republicans have fought it every step of the way. The Republicans have fought since the 30s any kind of benefits at all, any kind of recognition at all for parenting, whether it's like yourself, a stay-at-home dad. I was a stay-at-home dad for a year. When we were building the travel agency, Louise ran it the last year that we had it. She's a much better administrator than I am, much better manager. And you know, we took turns being stay-at-home parents through many of our companies and through many of the years. And, you know, I think parenting is important work, and it should be recognized and it should be paid, frankly, or at least have the benefits associated with payment, like Social Security. Thanks, Steve, for the call. Thanks for making the comment. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And John Ellis is on the line with us. He is with the National Association of Scholars, the president of the California Association of Scholars, CAS. The NAS.org is the national website. He's the author of Literature Lost, Social Agendas and the Corruption of the Humanities. It says Professor John Ellis. You're a professor of what?
I am indeed a professor of German literature.
Of German literature?
Yes.
Great. Like Goethe, that sort of thing you mean? Or?
I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
What sort of German literature?
Oh, I've written on mainly 18th and 19th century German literature.
Ah, fascinating. You guys have written this, California's Hidden Crisis, Radicals Sabotage State University's study.
I don't know who provided that title.
Your publicist.
It's going all over the internet, but that isn't the title of the thing.
I'm quoting from your press release.
Well, it may be the title of a press release, but it's not the title of the study.
Okay.
And press release writers, unfortunately, you know, as you know, dramatize things. But no, the title of the study is A Crisis of Competence,
okay.
The Corrupting Effect of Political Activism in the University of California.
All right.
Yeah.
What about, okay, give me an example.
Well, look, the basic problem we have is that in the last 3-4 years, a lot of different studies by a lot of different people, liberals, conservatives, employers, think tanks, they've all found the same result, which is that the graduates of American universities now, large numbers of them, can't write, can't reason, can't read any complicated document, and don't know anything about the history or the political institutions of the country they live in. Now, what we set out to investigate is how this happened, and we found that basically the cause is political activism, which has dumbed down the content of education.
You're kidding. The National Association of Scholars, you guys are funded by the Sarah Scaife Foundation. I mean, this is one of the most right-wing foundations out there.
Your former president
was out hawking the fact that there's no such thing as climate change.
Well, why don't we have a reasonable discussion of the issues?
To say that we've got a problem coming out of our educational system,
yeah. Well,
and the reason for it is politicization rather than... You know, I think any reasonable person could say, okay, if our college graduates are not as competent as they were at some reasonable point in the past, might it have something to do with the fact that on average our college graduates are graduating tens of thousands of dollars in debt? They're freaked out. They're having to work like crazy. There are cultural issues. They're spending more time in front of their computers.
That's,
they're, you know, got Facebook.
I mean, that's the issue. That's not the issue.
Oh, so it's liberal professors. Or is it conservative professors?
No, I never said liberal professors. You're putting words in my mouth.
Well, actually, I'm reading your publicist statement.
Liberal professors are fine. I was one myself for a long time. Liberal professors ran the universities in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and produced excellent results. And liberalism, as far as I'm concerned, is one of the great historic positions in political philosophy in this country. The other is conservatism. Both of them are positions of principle that deserve respect and deserve to be taught and analyzed and understood by everyone.
Okay, what I got from your publicist, including proposed questions for you, says how California's colleges indoctrinate students. A new report on the UC system documents the plague of politicized classrooms. First of all, let's assume for a moment that there are professors who are saying, I want to tell you all about Karl Marx, or I want to tell you all about fill in the blanks. I want to tell you about, some political position.
Mm-hmm.
How does that cause you to have students who can't read and write?
Well, it's very simple. Let me explain to you. A political activist is the exact opposite of an academic professor. An academic wants his students to open their minds, to think independently. An activist wants you to fall in behind him. I mean, an activist has a political goal in mind, and so he wants to achieve it, and that means uniformity, conformity. So that's one way in which it's a complete opposition. Activists are one thing, academics are another. Another thing is intellectual curiosity. I mean, we want, real professors want their students to be intellectually curious. An academic, a political activist wants students to shut down their curiosity and fall into line.
Well, it seems like that's what you guys are all about. I mean, your group was founded in 1987 with the goal of preserving the Western intellectual heritage.
Mm-hmm.
What's wrong with talking about the Asian intellectual heritage or the South American intellectual heritage? Or do you think that our colleges should only be, we should all be Anglophiles or Eurocentric?
You really do love to caricature the opposition, don't you? Why don't you listen to what I'm saying first before you put words into my mouth and make nonsense of what I'm saying?
I thought I was.
No. Well, let me explain it to you then. The Western tradition has a unique place. I mean, we should certainly, I'm all in favor of all traditions being studied and students having as much knowledge as possible. But the Western tradition, first of all, is the tradition that's made this country what it is. I mean, that's the tradition we emerge from.
I'm not opposing that. You said just a moment ago.
Understand the tradition you came from.
Wait a second. Will you listen to me for a moment, please? You said just a moment ago that the politicization had to do with shutting down people's thinking. That it was only, people could only talk about one particular topic.
Mm-hmm.
And I pointed out that your organization says that your main purpose is to keep people talking about one particular topic, to make sure Western history is the main, is the main thing that's coming out of colleges. Isn't that the same thing that you're complaining about?
No, you keep on putting words into my mouth.
I'm not.
What we're talking about is the fact that the Western tradition right now is not being taught, and we think it should be taught.
We don't.
There is a unique reason why it should be taught. It should be taught because it's the substratum of the civilization we live in. Students had better understand it. We're not saying that's the only thing they should know. We're saying political activists have suppressed that and removed it from the curriculum.
Are you the guys, Rick Santorum famously the other day said, it's gotten so bad at the University of California that they don't, in six or seven other colleges, they don't even teach Western history. And it turns out that was only true if you're speaking of the medical schools. Are you guys the source of that wacky statistic that Santorum put out?
No, we are not.
Every University of California campus has Western history classes.
Every University of California campus,
except for the medical schools.
I'm guessing that Santorum read the Wall Street Journal article that summarized our study, and then garbled the results horrendously, and got it completely wrong. But that's his problem, not ours.
But I am still baffled as to why you're suggesting that a bias in favor of anything other than Western history causes students not to be able to read.
That's, you know, if you want to discuss a position that I hold, let's get to that. Not ones I don't hold.
Well, we have about 30 seconds
I'll
left.
I'll repeat it for you again.
You started this out with this.
No, I'll repeat it for you again. The study of Western civilization is at the moment suppressed in the University of California. We want it not to be suppressed.
But you started out by saying you said it's a crisis of competence because we're graduating incompetent students who can't do basic math and can't read. How does that come out of not having learned Western civilization?
Well, the part of what I said, you may not remember, is that those studies show that people graduating these days in large numbers can't read, can't write, and can't reason, and they also know nothing about the history of the country they live in or its political
system. I see. So you were speaking only of the last part of that. Professor John Ellis, we're out of time, but people can read all about it at NAS.org. Thank you for being with us.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back 15 minutes past the hour.
Up in the morning and out to school.
Hey, check out Bernie.org if you want to know all about Bernie Sanders, who at this moment is standing on the floor of the Senate speaking about the Buffett rule. Let's listen.
Now own more wealth than the bottom half of America, 150 million people. 400 people here own more wealth than the bottom 150 million Americans, and that gap between the very rich and everybody else is now wider than it has been in this country since the late 1920s, and we have by far the most unequal distribution of income and wealth of any major country on earth. So that is where we are today as a nation. And it is not a good place to be. The richest people and largest corporations are doing phenomenally well, while the middle class is collapsing and poverty increases. This is not what democracy looks like. This is what oligarchy and plutocracy look like. And to compound this extremely unfair situation, when millionaires and billionaires are paying nearly the lowest effective tax rate for the rich in decades, our deficit problems only grow worse. In other words, not only are the real and effective tax rates for the rich lower than many middle-class workers, their low effective tax rates are having a very negative impact on our deficit. In fact, today, as a result of the tax breaks given to the wealthy and large corporations, revenue as a percentage of GDP is at 14.8%, the lowest in more than 50 years. So, Mr. President, let us pass the Buffett rule today, but let us do much more in the future. Instead of cutting Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, education, and other programs of vital importance to middle class and working families in this country, as many of my Republican colleagues would like to do, let us develop both personal and corporate tax policies which are fair and which protect the best interests of our country. Nobody should be talking about maintaining huge tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires and in the same breath talk about cutting Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, the needs of our children, and the needs of the most vulnerable people in our country. That is wrong, and that is not what America is about. And with that, Mr. President, I would yield the floor.
Okay, that was Senator Bernie Sanders on the floor of the United States Senate, wrapping up his rant about the Buffett rule. And the big debate now is the Buffett rule versus the Romney rule. The Romney rule says that billionaires, especially if they make their money on Wall Street, pay a maximum 15% income tax like Romney does. In fact, he paid 13.9% in the last year that we have his tax returns for, that millionaires and billionaires get to pay very, very little, whereas working people get to pay up to 35-36%. And that's the Romney rule. The Buffett rule says that after you earn your first $1 million, you can do that at 15%. Mitt Romney's first $1 million, he can pay only 15% tax on. But after that, his tax goes up to 30% on his second $1 million, and his third, and his fourth, and his fifth. He still gets to keep a hell of a lot of money. I mean, $700,000 out of every million? Not bad work if you can get it. Especially, you know, like in Romney's case, you get the money, he's getting checks for hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars every month or every couple months. And what's he doing for it? Well, he's kind of hanging around. Well, he's running for president, I guess. Don in St. Louis. Hey, Don, what's up?
Good afternoon, Tom. Hey. I was listening to a caller earlier talking about why so many people are buying into the Republican propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
And Bernie Sanders just made it perfectly clear why myself and any working American should not be supporting Republicans. And didn't we just recently hear that Santorum was running subliminal messages in his political campaigns?
I don't know. Did we? I didn't hear that.
I heard something about he was running an ad saying those people that support enemies of America, and he was running pictures of Obama, Bin Laden.
Oh yeah, you're right. He got called out on that. It was a TV ad. Yeah.
Right, and in the background was between every other picture was a picture of our president.
That's right.
Which was and.
And had Democrats run an ad like that with a Republican in the White House, they would have been called traitors. It would be all over the media. You know, the Drudge Report, which has become the assignment editor for America's newspapers and television networks, would have had a screaming headline right up at the top for a long, long time. And it's all we would have heard.
Absolutely.
And instead, you're right. It was just a drop in the bucket. In fact, as I said, I had forgotten it happened until you reminded me.
And I wonder how often that's happening on Fox, and how often that's happening on CNN, and how often that's happening on other right-wing outlets. And maybe this is why, when you talk to a Republican about facts, he says, I have all the necessary facts I need, and I don't need to look at anything else.
Yeah. It's people watching Fox News. Roger Ailes, when he was in the Nixon administration, and he wrote this proposal for GOP TV. It's what they called it, GOP TV. And, you know, Richard Nixon couldn't raise the money to do it and ultimately turned it down. But he reprised this when he got a billionaire to back him. That would be Rupert Murdoch. And it lost $100 million a year for 5 years. I mean, there had to be 5 years there where Roger Ailes was like, boy, I sure hope he doesn't pull a plug because this is going to be one huge failed experiment. But after the fifth year, it started making money, and they're doing very well now, and they're doing it with this propaganda-like approach.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And lots of dog whistle politics. It's really, really quite extraordinary. Occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and Elizabeth in Farmington Hills, Michigan. Hey, Elizabeth, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Oh, I'm just enjoying the show. Thank you so much for showing us Bernie a little bit ago.
Yeah.
And I actually called with an idea for you, and I was thinking, wouldn't it be fun if one afternoon you had just callers with ideas? Call in. But anyway, this is probably not a new idea. Maybe it's just to remind people that this is something that we could do with the whole Social Security and Medicare thing. We could, starting as tomorrow, every single citizen born in the United States of America, a fund is started by the government for them, and they, you know, leave it to the accountants how much that would be. And where that would be placed, but an actual an actual savings account would be started the day the citizen is born. This would take the place by the time they're 21. This would be a fund that's, you know, gone through doubling and trebling in value. It's their fund. It's their fund until their old age or until they become unemployed for stretches of time, if that were to happen. And this would be their fund.
Do you know who first proposed that almost identically to what you just described?
What's that?
Thomas Paine in his book Agrarian Justice. It is the focal point of the book.
Well, that's what we should do.
And that was in 1794, I think he wrote that. It was right after the French Revolution. So I strongly recommend you get a hold of a copy. It's not a long, particularly long book, and he lays it out in great detail. And, you know, to back up your argument, it's Agrarian Justice by Thomas Paine, the guy who wrote Common Sense and
well,
The Crisis.
Well, why aren't we doing this? I mean, it just seems so commonsensical.
Well, the fact of the matter is that we are all covered by Social Security from birth. It is, but it's an insurance program. It's not an investment or an annuity.
Right. Which makes all the difference to me.
Well, yeah, if you want to see a return on it. Payne's suggestion was that the government from the wealth of the commons, that the nation own all the mineral rights and all the timber rights, and whenever anything gets cut down or sold or mined or whatever, that the nation make a profit on that, and that profit be used to fund what would you call it? A fund, I guess.
Sure.
That is given at birth to every person when they're born, and that you know, over time that would grow. And Paine was very fond of this idea. He also proposed Social Security. He also proposed minimum wage laws. He also talked, you know, about unionization. Thomas Paine, much of what became the New Deal, you will find in Agrarian Justice, in Thomas Paine's 1793 or 94 book.
Well, I wish somebody in our Senate would pick it up and run with it and get it done.
There you go. So I thought you'd want to know, you know, great minds think alike. You're in great company, Elizabeth.
Wonderful.
Oh, you and Thomas Paine. Thanks a lot for the call. Is that Joe from, Hatfield, Mass?
Hatfield, Mass, right outside Northampton. Hi, Tom.
So what's up, Joe? If you could take it off the speakerphone, it would be great.
You know, I'm on Skype. It's not speaker.
Oh, I see.
I apologize.
All right.
I'll be really quick, Will.
Sure.
You're the Thomas Paine of today, sir. Okay,
in my dreams.
The kerfuffle with Ann Romney.
Yeah.
I was a little ticked immediately because Romney said, you know, about these issues, women's issues, women care about the economy. That's what my wife says, and I listen to her.
Right.
As soon as he said that, she became a pundit. So she could, of course, her opinion could be attacked. But here's the deal. When she got attacked, she turned around and talked to Fox News. Nobody's picked up on this yet, but I think it's huge. Her exact quote to them was, "My career choice was to be a mother, and I think all of us need to know that we need to respect the choices women make." She's pro-choice.
Well, you know, no, Michelle Bachmann said the same thing over the weekend.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, in fact, I've got the story here. It's kind of a gotcha because you know that she really doesn't mean it the way it's been taken, you know, essentially out of context. I'll have to grab it on the computer. But, yeah, it was Michelle Bachmann. And
if that's true, then she can't blame the pundit for saying something that she didn't mean either.
Yeah. Here's what Michelle Bachmann said. She said, what we want is women to be able to make their own choices. We want women to make their that's right. We've got the clip of it here. I knew we had it around here someplace. Let me have Jacob play it for you. Here it is.
That's the lie that happens under Obamacare. The president of the United States effectively becomes a health care dictator. Women don't need anyone to tell them what to do on health care. We want women to have their own choices, their own money. That way they can make their own choices for their future on their own body.
Yeah, but really what she was saying is you have to have your own money, which Ann Romney has. I mean, you know, she was rich before she married Mitt, and she's a lot richer now from having married Mitt. So that's the situation. But, Joe, interesting point. Thanks a lot for the call. Armin in Bradenton, Florida. Hey, Armin, what's on your mind?
What's on my mind? That was interesting little dialogue you had with you and that professor.
Aha, okay. I thought it was interesting that he started out by saying that Our schools are producing kids who can't read, who can't write, who can't do math, and who don't understand Western history, and that this is all because of politicians having a educators having a political agenda. And I still don't understand how somebody having a political agenda, assuming that that's the fact, and I'm not sure that that's the fact, is somehow going to mean that people can't read or do math. I don't get it.
Well, maybe he's saying that it's the political agenda that does that, and other political agendas don't do that.
Yeah.
And that's what the Republicans are trying to do when they're trying to transform education.
I think one of the problems we have, Armin, with our educational scores, and it is true that if you look right across the board at American colleges, that the competence of students graduating from colleges has fallen. But if you take for-profit colleges, which now represent a substantial portion of the American college landscape, if you take these for-profit colleges, which have the highest rates of bad student loans and people not graduating and all these, if you take them out of the equation and you just look at public universities and you just look at schools that are publicly funded, you don't see such a bad outcome.
Well, let me say this politically, please, Tom, if I may. And I think what you were hoping get out of him was his political agenda, which he was very careful to keep it concealed. That's my opinion of that conversation based on the information that I observed. But
yes.
Now on this other issue of education, what the Republicans really want is they don't care so much about the money being spent and being wasted and the results. It's way beyond that. I've followed them. I've studied them. I've come from a good culture that has lived the issue. And the issue is, I used to live in Illinois. It's 90%, 80%. It's always been predominantly Democrat. The Democrats up there are the corporatists that steal. The Democrats are the ones that run the system, that run the public unions and all this. You come to Florida, and it's completely inverted. When we came here in the 80s, if you're not a Republican, you might as well have leprosy. If you say you're a Democrat, you might as well say you have leprosy. I mean, or you got syphilis or something. The fact of the matter is the thieves and the movers and shakers in Florida are predominantly Republican in the two right. counties that we work in all the time. And boy, I mean, they blackball you if you don't go along with the agenda. It's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have to conclude what the Republicans really want is they want totalitarian allegiance to their political party. And what you're saying that Fox has used, and they've used it very successfully, thank you, Bill Clinton and Newt Gingrich, for the telecommunications bill and the consolidation of the media. What they do is they repetitiously focus a singular dimension for these people to where they're like zombies and they're totally programmed just like a cult and they're brainwashed. And what the Republicans want, they don't want to take care of, they don't want to eliminate the capitalistic abuses, if you will, and the inefficiency in the education system. They're perfectly happy if it's dysfunctional, as long as the 95% of the capital that goes into it and comes out of it goes to their donors and the control of their party and their cult.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Yeah, you're right, Armin, and it's well said. And in my opinion, the reason why you are seeing these attacks on public education, and this is just the tip of the spear, is because they want to defund it. They want to make more money for their for-profit people. Josh in Portland. Hey, Josh, got a minute. What's up?
Hey, Tom, I'll keep it quick. I'm a 26-year-old male who came from a staunch Republican family, hardcore mom and father, and about 4 years ago I started listening to you and watching a couple other programs because I've seen the issues of the world a little bit differently, and I got my mom to start listening to your show, and within 2 years she switched from staunch conservative to liberal now. She's still fighting with my father on every issue, but I believe that you woke a sleeping liberal giant in my mother, and I got to thank you for it, Tom.
Well, you should thank your mother. I mean, it's great to have a parent who has an open mind and who's willing to listen to all sides of things and come to reasonable conclusions. Be they conservative or liberal, I'm all in favor of honest discussions and people having. The thing that I think is so sad is the quote independent voters, the people who really, if you ask them who there's a member of Congress, they don't know. you know, who don't understand the issues. But, Josh, thank you for the thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for listening to KPOJ there in Portland. It's great. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program, the place where, you know, we dare to ask the question, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, no, no, don't think so. Either it's Koch Industries or Goldman Sachs or, I mean, you name it. No.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Up next, more of your calls. And we're going to check in with the Talk Radio News Service to find out what's going on in the world and how the Senate vote is going. Stick around.
Yes, me friend, them set me free again. Yes, me friend.
Welcome back, and by the way, welcome to our newest TV affiliate station, Marblehead Television and Marblehead Mass, running the Tom Hartman Program. Also, please join me along with Dina Razor and Gar Alperovitz as Truth Out presents Reimagining a Just Economy. That'll be Sunday, May 6th at 5 p.m. at the Tabard Inn here in Washington, D.C. You can get tickets over at Truth Out. This is $25. It's a fundraiser for Truth Out, and I will be there. And it should be a lot of fun. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com. Hey, Victoria, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Well, there's quite a lot that's up as Congress is now back and things are rolling on many fronts.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up in less than an hour now, the Senate will vote on the Buffett rule. This, of course, the rule whereby if you are earning over $1 million a year, you should be paying, the idea being more than your secretary, in taxes, and that would be 30%.
Right, which is less than some secretaries pay, are made.
Correct.
I mean, Warren Buffett's secretary pays 36% because she's very well paid.
That's right. That's right. This will not pass. I sound like Gandalf in one of the Lord of the Rings trilogy here. It will not pass. They need to get 60 votes. It's a cloture vote, which means this is the vote to get it to go forward. And it needs 60 votes because nothing gets done these days in comity and amity. So it won't get them. Question's
right.
Going to be, will it be sort of 53-47 on a strict party split? Or will some Democrats jump ship and some Republicans jump ship because they've got tough elections? And that's what we don't know.
Right. Why would a Democrat jump ship on? Oh, because they don't want to be accused of threatening to raise taxes, even though there's an asterisk in the television ad to a little tiny printout at the bottom that says raising taxes on people who earn over $1 million a year.
Exactly, and Claire McCaskill may make that decision.
Oh, that's interesting. Now,
but she may not.
Which Republicans might jump ship and why?
Scott Brown.
Elizabeth
Warren.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So we'll know within an hour or so.
Yeah, pretty much. The it starts around 5:30 Eastern time, so
yeah.
We'll know fairly soon.
Yeah.
Meantime, another thing that's starting, House Republicans have begun rolling out the first wave of $33.2 billion in 10-year savings. Now, it's going to have an impact on the farm bill debate and also in November, the 2012 elections. And this is food stamps. They plan to cut them, and an average family of four faces an 11% cut in monthly benefits after September the 1st. Also, the tighter enforcement of rules demanding that households exhaust most of their savings before qualifying for help.
Oh, my. Now, who's behind this?
Republicans, House Republicans.
Oh.
Specifically, the Agriculture Committee. And this is interesting because this may be seen to be an overreach because these cuts are really quite severe.
Yes.
This package should be taken up by the House Agriculture Committee.
If I may,
yes.
Fact check me. My understanding is that food stamps give you about $3 per day per person to live on for food. Am I remembering that right?
That's my understanding. I didn't check the exact amount, but my memory is that that's about the amount.
Okay. So, and they want to, yeah, try to live on $3 a day. And they want to cut that.
Right.
Okay. Pardon my interrupting you. Continue.
That's okay. No, that's okay. So this new package is going to be taken up by the House Agriculture Committee on Wednesday. It's going to end Recovery Act boost in benefits abruptly in summer, impact families at the beginning of September, and save quite a lot of money. It's coming from agriculture. in a context where, of course, there are rich farm subsidies and they're protected at a time of record income for farmer producers.
So, yeah, I was just thinking, isn't the Ag Committee the one that's passing out billions of dollars in tax breaks and subsidies, principally to corn growers, but to all kinds of farms? And you've got a whole bunch of people, even in the Senate and the House, who have, you know, 10 acres or 100 acres or 500 acres out someplace, and they put a cow on it, and all of a sudden it's a farm, and it's eligible for not only lower local taxes, but also federal subsidies.
Yes. And this is why this is thought that this could actually be an overreach. And it's not quite, people aren't quite sure why they're doing this, because there is a pretty much consensus that this idea of cash payments to growers at a time when they've got these really high profits can't be defended politically.
No, but ADM has, ADM and what are the, Cargill, what are the big, there's three big ag companies.
Right.
They've got some
business.
Yeah, yeah, they've got some serious lobbyists here on Capitol Hill. They pass out a lot of money.
And what's also interesting is that votes are not always strictly party line. You get a diverse set of Republicans voting. For example, Mark Rubio, Republican of Florida, flipped and voted with the Democrats on this in a 58-41 Senate vote last October. Because in Florida, with very high unemployment, they've more than doubled their participation in food stamps.
And they're not, they do produce a lot of agricultural products, but not the kind that are typically subsidized, which is mostly corn and wheat.
Right, exactly. So there's no guarantee of where this is going to go if it gets through the House and up to the Senate. So, and the White House estimates as many as 234,000 Floridians could lose their access to food stamps in the coming year under the Republican budget plan.
A quarter of a million people just in Florida will no longer be able to feed themselves?
Yes.
With food stamps? That's
correct.
Breathtaking.
Astonishing.
Yeah.
Astonishing.
So what else is going on?
On the Sex and the Secret Service.
Actually, can I go back to that?
Yeah.
What are the Republicans, of course, control the House, and the Tea Party controls the Republicans in the House. What are the probabilities of that actually making it through the Senate?
Not high.
So what's going to happen? Are you going to see a budget impasse and people on, you know, all the ag stuff just dies?
I think, like so much else this year, you're going to see an impasse, which is why I think there's a real possibility of a fight over a government shutdown come election time.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah.
All right, we're out of time, Victoria. I'm sorry. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
GoatsForTheOldGoat.com is who brings you Talk Radio News, and Victoria Jones.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, about half of Americans think their taxes are just right. About half think they're too high, but, you know, interesting. Welcome back to the program. Representative Virginia Fox, the Republican from North Carolina. Every now and then these people just come out and say what they're thinking, and you go, oh, really? Here she is.
I went through school. I worked my way through. It took me 7 years. I never borrowed a dime of money. We both were totally on our own. You know, I have very little tolerance for people who tell me that they graduate with $200,000 of debt or even $80,000 of debt, because there's no reason for that. I remind folks all the time that the Declaration of Independence says life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Mm-hmm. You don't sit on your butt and have it dumped in your lap.
Right. Now, this is Representative Fox is considerably older than I am guessing. And I'm old enough to remember back in the late 60s, early 70s, when you could go to college in the United States for free in many parts of this country. I mean, literally for free. The University of California was free. Or for so cheap that, and I've said this a million times, my wife worked her way through college working as a waitress in a Howard Johnson's part-time, and, you know, I didn't complete college. In fact, I didn't even complete the full first year, but and went to two different ones, but to the extent that I did, I worked my way through college working as a dishwasher and then a cook at Bob's Big Boy, working at a gas station, pumping gas and inflating tires and changing tires, and working as a minimum wage DJ at WITL AM and FM Lansing, Michigan. And this is all when I was 17. Back then you could go to college, you could work your way through school. In fact, you know, I've kept in touch over the years with a lot of the people that I knew in college. I used to, we started a business in the early 70s, and a number of them came to work with me. And I don't know anybody who had student loans, who had student debt. There might have been a few. I mean, it might have been, you know, some of the folks in the medical school or some in the longer-term programs, veterinary school, something like that. But actually, even one of my roommates, he's just retired a few months ago or maybe a year ago as he was a urological surgeon, kidney surgeon. And he was fond of nitrous oxide. I remember that well. And in any case, to the best of my knowledge, he had no student loans. It was like you could go to school back when Virginia Fox was a kid. You could work your way through school, you know? You just can't do that anymore. I challenge anybody to work their way through a public university, and that's, presumably that's what we're talking about, to work your way through a public university as a waiter or a waitress at the equivalent of a Howard Johnson. I don't know if Hojo's are still in business, but... whatever the modern incarnation is, TGI Fridays. You really think you can put yourself through school that way? It's just astounding. And then welfare recipients should be required to work, right? You've got, you're married, you got a couple of kids, your husband leaves you, or your wife leaves you with the kids, or gets sick, or dies, or gets hit by a bus, and you need some help. And Mitt Romney says, nah, you can't just raise those kids. Sorry, you got to work, too.
When I was governor, 85% of the people on a form of welfare assistance in my state had no work requirement. And I wanted to increase the work requirement. I said, for instance, that even if you have a child 2 years of age, you need to go to work. And people said, well, that's heartless. And I said, no, I'm willing to spend more giving daycare to allow those parents to go back to work. It'll cost the state more providing that daycare. But I want the individuals to have the dignity of work.
Yeah, there's a lot of dignity working at Walmart. Don't you know? Flipping burgers. I mean, I can tell you, you know, when I was 17, well, in fact, the summer when I was 16, I picked apples up in White Cloud, Michigan to save some money. I was a migrant farm worker living in a trailer that we had refashioned, myself and a friend of mine. We had refashioned out of an old U-Haul trailer. I mean, you know, like an 8x10 foot U-Haul trailer. We had turned it into a thing that we could sleep in. And we were living in this thing and picking apples up in White Cloud, Michigan, in northern Michigan, north of Grand Rapids, for that summer, or for much of that summer. And I'll tell you, those migrant workers, that's hard work. And you get paid by the lug, which is like a giant bag it's more than a bushel. But in any case, that's, you know, great work experience. I think it was, you know, a fine and marvelous thing. 16, 17, 18 years old, get out there and change tires, work as a dishwasher, work as a waiter, work as a flipping burgers as a cook, work as a DJ. That was, you know, I mean, that's one of the reasons I'm here on the radio right now. But somebody who's in their 20s and trying to raise their kids and they have had some experience in the workplace, or that, you know, you want to take their children away from them and put them in daycare so that they can have the experience of the dignity of work, when most of the jobs today are dead-end jobs that pay very poorly. It's like all of these Republicans are living in the 50s or the 60s or the 70s. They're living in the pre-Reagan era in their minds, and they want everybody who's living today to live in that area, in that era, only it doesn't exist anymore. I mean, back then, back before Reagan, one person could raise a family with a decent paycheck. I mean, you know, my dad working in a tool and die shop raised me and my three brothers. And my mom, I mean, she didn't even have a driver's license. She wouldn't have been able to vote today. But you can't do that today. GM, Ford, Chrysler, they're hiring now, instead of hiring at a decent wage that you can raise a family at, they're hiring at $15 an hour. And I defy you to raise a family at $15 an hour. Or, for that matter, even put yourself through college. And then women on unemployment. Ed Gillespie goes on to Fox News to say, Obama's responsible for all these women being unemployed. The last unemployment figures showed that there are more women unemployed recently than men. Well, yeah, that's true, because the early people who lost their jobs were all the manufacturing jobs, and now it is more service industry jobs. Here's Ed Gillespie getting slapped down by Fox.
You know, 858,000 women have lost their jobs since President Obama took office. 92.3% of the job loss in this recession or slow recovery, stifled recovery, have fallen on women. We have the highest level
of... You know that, I mean, it is true that more women have lost jobs, and it's true that more women are without jobs now.
Yeah.
But it is not true that 90%, they did under Obama,
yes,
but many, many more men, because they're in the job sectors that people lose jobs first, lost jobs under President Bush. So, I mean, it's a little bit of an accounting trick, and all of the independent fact finders have said it's misleading.
It's misleading. You know that your Romney talking points are in deep trouble when, as the Romney surrogate, you go on Fox News and Chris Wallace, you know, a Fox toady, slaps you down. You know you've got a problem. If Fox News calls you a liar, you're really a liar. At least if you're putting out Republican talking points and they call you a liar. 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh, and Newt Gingrich, he wants to arm the world. Maybe he's looking for Coney to give him some guns. I'll play that one for you when we get back. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. Speaking in front of the National Rifle Association, Newt Gingrich wants to arm the world. Yes, we're talking to the Trade Association for the Weapons Manufacturers. So, you know, I'll bet if he was talking to the corn producers, he'd be talking about everybody should have the right to have corn. And if he was talking to the wheat producers, everybody should have a right to have wheat. And if he was talking to the Secret Service, he'd be, everybody should have the right to have a hooker. And, in fact, actually, there is a rumor that Newt is trying to get employment with the Secret Service now. But in any case, he's speaking in front of the gun manufacturers and sellers, and here's what he had to say.
A Gingrich presidency will submit to the United Nations a treaty that extends the right to bear arms as a human right for every person on the planet, because every person on the planet deserves the right to defend themselves from those who would oppress them, exploit them, rape them, or kill them. The time has come to win the following proposition. Far fewer women would be raped, far fewer children would be killed, far fewer towns would be destroyed if people everywhere on the planet had the right to bear arms, and far fewer dictators would survive if people had the right to bear arms everywhere on the planet.
Yeah, that's going to work out really well, isn't it? I mean, you know, those countries where everybody has a gun, things are just all so peaceful. Coney. Everything is just fine. Egypt. It's, I mean, sometimes you listen to these guys and you just wonder, you know, have they totally lost it? Senator Charles Schumer was on a press conference call this morning that our associate producer Jacob participated in, and he pulled a couple of clips from it. Here's Senator Schumer talking about the Buffett rule, which is being debated and voted on by Congress as we speak.
Today, day before tax day, we're going to find out who's in favor of having everyone do their fair share and who wants to protect tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires at any cost.
Yeah, there you go. Senator Chuck Schumer, the Democrat from the great state of New York and one of the ranking members, one of the leading members, the most senior members of the Democratic caucus in the United States Senate. In fact, he pointed out that 43% of Republicans actually support the Buffett rule.
Gallup poll last week showed 6 in 10 Americans in favor of it, and even 43% of Republicans approve. Last week, a group of millionaires sent a letter to Minority Leader McConnell asking him to allow a debate on the bill.
Right. You know, in other words, please don't filibuster this. Right? Well, actually, they should have asked him to allow a vote on the bill as well. And maybe they did. No, probably they did. I'm guessing that they know what they're doing. So, and in fact, here's Chuck Schumer asking, why are the Republicans doing this, you know, opposing this?
So the question we're asking today is why? If the policy is popular, if the policy is right, if the need for deficit reduction is so important, are Republicans in the Senate intent on blocking us from even debating the legislation?
Right. So, anyhow, a lot going on here. Gary in Surprise, Arizona. Gary, you have a story about back in the day.
Yes, way back in the day.
Okay.
I have a couple of things. But anyhow, I started college in 1957.
Oh, that is back
so
in the day.
I'm probably the dumb woman's same age.
Yeah. Yes.
Who I think is one of the dumb
Congresswoman people. Virginia Fox, the Republican from North Carolina.
Stupid. I'm stupid. But anyhow, I paid $45 a quarter.
A quarter. That's a quarter of a year.
A quarter of a year. We had the quarter system, so 45 times 3 is what?
90 plus 45, $135?
A year.
30, 140?
To go to three quarters of school.
What school was this?
It was Eastern Washington College.
Uh-huh. So this was a real college.
Yeah, real college. I have a degree. It took me 12 years to get through. I spent 3 years in the Marine Corps.
Uh huh.
Because at that time we had no option.
Sure.
You were either 4F or you did 6 years reserves, etc.
Yeah.
I spent 3 years in the Marine Corps. I went back to school and I worked summer jobs for two, three bucks an hour.
Yeah.
Paid my way through.
Yeah.
Borrowed a little money, paid it back, and then I got a good job in an aluminum factory where I worked for 32 years, but the last 2 years I was married, I got a GI Bill, and I was making $350 an hour.
Which was good money back then.
Which was good money, but I was still only paid, I think at the most, $300 a year to go to school.
To go to college. Yeah, and very, very well said. And this is, you know, you're closer to my mother's generation, and my mother went to Michigan State University. Her family had nothing. Her father died of a heart attack when she was 13 years old and left behind my mother and my grandmother. And my grandmother had a job as the city clerk in Charlevoix, Michigan. And I used to go over my grandmother died when I was 7. But I used to go over as a little kid. I still remember pushing at noon, the fire alarm would go off, you know, to signify it's noon. For the town, and she let me push the button. And but my grandmother had nothing. I mean, they got wiped out during the Great Depression. And my mom went to Michigan State University 4 years, graduated magna or sigma cum laude, you know, with major honors.
Yeah.
And she did all of that on a job of, during the summer, being the lifeguard on the beach in Charlevoix. If you're familiar with Michigan, it's up on Lake Michigan in northern Michigan. And she was a lifeguard up there during the summer months. And then during the school year on weekends, she would go out to the airport in Lansing and wash planes and prop planes. You know, you had back in those days, you started a plane by flipping the propeller. And it was a fairly dangerous job because every now and then it would cut people in half.
I remember doing that.
Yeah. Well,
when I was a kid at the airport.
Yeah. That's how my mom worked her way through college. And it's like, you could do that, you know, And it's just, it's, you know, Gary, we're sitting here sounding like a couple of old geezers. But the fact of the matter is that
I have one more point I'd like to bring.
Okay, but you got about 15 seconds. Quick.
Okay. The guy that called before about the foreign companies.
Yeah.
In Arizona, about 60 miles from Phoenix, there is a 690-acre solar farm being built by the Spanish.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, the Spanish company.
And there's another 350-acre one about...
listening to the Tom Hartman program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Yeah, it is... There's a lot of stuff happening in the United States that is foreign money. We need to bring these jobs home. Well, that would be the good, the bad, and the very, very dextrosinistralously ugly. Brought to you by EdisonFactor.com, food for your brain. The good. British Columbia Supreme Court Justice Robert Johnson. Last week, Johnson struck down a portion of Canada's medical marijuana laws. He concluded that a restriction on the use of dried marijuana only in Canada's medical access regulations was unconstitutional. If the ruling is upheld, medical marijuana users in Canada will be able to possess marijuana in any form. Across the globe, medical marijuana is being recognized as a viable treatment for people suffering from crippling illness and disease. It's time the American government followed in Justice Johnston's footsteps and started to embrace medical marijuana as well. The bad. Representative Virginia Fox. In a radio interview yesterday, Fox, the House chairwoman of the Subcommittee on Higher Education, attacked people who are drowning in student loan debt after college. She said, I have very little tolerance for people who tell me that they graduate with $200,000 of debt or even $80,000 of debt because there's no reason for that, end quote. There's no reason for mountains of student loan debt. Higher education in America is drastically underfunded. In fact, Pell Grants now cover the lowest amount of college costs in their history. Sorry, Representative Fox, students are in debt because of the Republican refusal to help lower the costs of education. And the very, very ugly Miami-Dade Fire Department Captain Brian Beckman. Beckman is under investigation by the department for posting a racist rant on his Facebook page. In the rant, Beckman argued that Trayvon Martin's death was due to poor parenting. He said, I and my coworkers could rewrite the book on whether our urban youth are victims of racist profiling or products of their failed S-word bag, ignorant, pathetic, welfare-dependent excuses for parents, end of quote. Apparently, Beckman is unaware that both of Martin's parents are hard-working Americans and do not depend on welfare. They both have full-time jobs. Surely, Beckman has seen the racial tension across this nation because of the Martin death. Knowingly adding more fuel to the fire with such hateful and ignorant words? That is very, very ugly. Wow. That is really very ugly. Okay, the buffer rule, they are debating, and Bill Gates weighed in on this. Clip 11, Jacob. Bill Gates weighed in on the buffer rule. He was, well, actually, I'm not sure it was specific to the buffer rule, but apropos of the buffer rule, shall we say. This was, he was talking with on the British Broadcasting Service, BBC.
Do you agree with President Obama in his State of the Union address that the Buffett rule needs to kick in, that people as wealthy as yourself should pay more tax?
Well, the United States has a huge budget deficit, so taxes are going to have to go up. And I certainly agree they should go up more on the rich than everyone else. That's just justice.
That's just justice, says the richest guy in America. Okay, the second richest guy in America, clip 12, Warren Buffett, after whom the Buffett rule is named, says this.
But then there's other people who make money with money. There's nothing wrong with Governor Romney doing that. There's nothing wrong with me doing it. But there's something very, very wrong with the policy. It's the Congress is responsible for that lets us pay taxes at a rate that's about half what Debbie pays.
All right. Debbie is his secretary. So Warren Buffett's secretary pays twice the rate of taxes that he does. And Mitt Romney's secretary probably pays twice the rate of taxes that he does. And then, of course, Joe Biden had to weigh in because Joe Biden weighs in on everything. And this one was pretty good.
Look, the Buffett rule says No one making more than $1 million will pay a smaller share of their income taxes than middle-class families do. The Romney rule says that the very wealthy should keep every tax break and loophole they have and get additional new tax cuts every year that are worth more than what the average middle-class family makes in a year, in an entire year. The Romney rule says, let's double down on the tax cuts for the wealthy.
Right. Let's just double down on those things. Those cuts are, you know, those tax cuts really worked out well, you know, just brilliantly. Ronald Reagan did his tax cuts, gave us the biggest deficits in the history of America, literally, in the history of our country. And then George Herbert Walker Bush added to that, although at the very last minute there, he started to flinch. You know, he was like, oh, maybe we should raise taxes a little bit. That got Grover Norquist types all over him. Bill Clinton actually raised taxes, and when he did, Newt Gingrich took the floor of the House of Representatives and said, if this bill passes, and it did, if this bill passes, you will see a Great Depression. Because the president, Bill Clinton, is going to raise taxes by 3%. Well, there was no Great Depression. Instead, there was a boom. The budget got balanced. In fact, there were balanced budgets when Bill Clinton left office in 2000, as far as the eye could see. Well, you get a Republican in office after that, George W. Bush, and you go back to Jude Winanski's two Santa Claus theory and say, no, you know, we can't have balanced budgets. That's crazy. Run up as much debt as possible when you got a Republican in the office. And then, you know, when you've got a Democrat in the office, you scream about the debt. That's very simple. Very simple formula. Nathan in Hood River, Oregon. Hey, Nathan, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I used to be a libertarian when I first started listening to you on AE. But I think there's a real way to avoid escalating into a heated political debate. Thanks to your information that you tend to, you repeat it, which is good. But if you're going to get into a political discussion with someone, I always ask them if they think the alphabet news or commercial media is liberal or conservative. If they think it's liberal, like we're all trained to believe from an early age, you're not really going to have a meaningful discussion with them. But the way you can make it fun is, and this works really well with opinionated people, is bet them $20 whether or not the Republicans are more fiscally conservative than Democrats, which is pretty easy to prove. Mm. And also where you find the Federal Reserve phone number in the phone book, because most people think it's in the blue section, but obviously it's not. So just those three simple questions. If you want to avoid getting into a real heated political debate, you can.
Yeah, it's a good way. It's a good way to determine, you know, what's up and who you're talking to. Good point, Nathan. Thank you. Thank you very much for the call. Randy in Los Angeles. Hey, Randy, what's up?
Well, here's my comment, Tom. First of all, I enjoy the show tremendously. You know, when I listen to, and I do, I'm a lawyer, to all of the right-wing stations, this is what I've concluded. They've taken the word progressive, which by definition means progress, and they've attempted to turn it into a negative. So I've concluded that there is a huge cultural gap between people on the left and people on the right, from the music they eat, they hear, to movies, to food, to dress, to fashion, to politics, to everything. The right-wing people are so culturally disconnected from the left that they will never truly understand what we are about, which is to be liberal, to be progressive, to see movement, to see change, something that the Republicans are absolutely panicked about. They are living mortal fear, and they pander to people who live in a state of fear. Democrats don't.
I agree. I absolutely agree. And not only do they pander to people who live in a state of fear, but they exacerbate that fear at every opportunity.
It's sad. It really is sad.
Yeah, be afraid, be afraid. Those Muslims are going to come and get you. Those African-American 17-year-old kids with their hoodies, they're going to come and get you. Just fill in the blanks. They're going to come and get you. That's the subtext of most of the programming on right-wing talk radio and on Fox News. And you're right. I think that there is a cultural chasm. And it may have something to do with brainwiring. I mean, who knows? There's a lot of different theories out there. but it's real, and it would be nice if we could get past it, but we have not since the founding of this country. There have been basically conservatives and progressives literally since the founding of this country. And I think the thing that we need to do is figure out how to all live together and make the country work. But, of course, that's the sort of thing a liberal would say. A conservative would say, where's my gun? So, Sandy, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Catherine in Irvine, New York. Is it Irvine or Irvine?
Irving.
Irving. Okay. Yes. What's up?
Well, thank you very much, first young man, for doing what it is you do.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling me young.
Keith Olbermann came off the air on MSNBC, I have been hunting for somebody that made some sense. And by God, don't you.
Well, thank you. We've got a pretty good network here on Free Speech TV. You're watching us on television, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And I am thrilled to tell you that because of some of the poking and prodding you've done through things you've said over previous broadcasts, I am a disabled female. I went to school, got a master's degree, with $86,000 in debt.
Ouch.
14 months after I graduated, I suffered a severe spinal cord injury at work.
Oh, my.
I cannot work ever again, period.
Right.
So for individuals like myself, we fall between a very thin crack that nobody ever says a word about. There's my number one point.
Right. You're eligible for Social Security disability, but that doesn't pay your student debt, does it?
Exactly. And because of laws that existed at the time I got hurt, and I got hurt 21 years ago.
Wow.
So I have a situation where medical disability is the only reason it will discharge back to the federal government. That's what guaranteed student loan means. However, since your broadcast, like I said, I have gotten rid of all the big banks.
Yeah, that's great.
I've gotten rid of all the credit cards. I've refinanced my house with a small loan.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Catherine, 5 seconds. Thank you so much for calling and for...
Well, I want to know what else we can do because the Buffett rule...
Get politically active. That's what we got to do.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
You tell them, Leonard, spoken like a good Canadian. They understand, right? The Canadians understand. Diane in Laguna Beach. Hey, Diane, what's up?
I have... It's three boys, and I'm lucky to be in a situation where I'm married to a man who has enabled us to live on a single income. Mm-hmm. Not anything like the Romneys, but we're pretty well off.
Mm-hmm.
But I really do try to instill in my boys, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, that they have social equity.
Mm-hmm.
And because my oldest son, when he left college, there are people in our neighborhood could introduce him, you know, could give him a job because, you know, we just have people here who own companies. And
right.
So you just naturally have that ability. And, you know, plus we also had at one point our daughter who was very ill and in the hospital. And I just remember being able to sit by her bedside and then seeing children in the other rooms where their mothers had to work. But I had somebody to help me with my son at the time. And, you know, I just don't understand it, how people who are privileged don't get it.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe because I did work, I had a very similar background to yours, and I worked for TWA for many years and had Carl Icahn with the first evil Carl in my life.
Oh, my.
So I do have that experience. Maybe that, you know, makes me more sensitive to the whole situation. But I do think that we, you know, I think there's social equity. There's also maybe even a beauty equity. People who are more sometimes better looking sometimes get their foot in the door a little easier.
It's true.
Which is a reality. And, you know, luck.
Yeah.
I mean, luck.
Those three equities in combination, I only semi-jokingly refer to as the lucky sperm club. And social scientists who look at it through the lens of race refer to it as white privilege. And
exactly.
And that is that, you know, when my kids were born, they were born with, I mean, literally, my brother has been tracking our family back, and he's tracked it back to 1409, to a guy named John Hammond. My mother's name was Hammond. All the way back to 1409. There's centuries of social equity there. And, you know, it wasn't financial equity, but it was social equity. It was cultural equity. And then you have people who were brought to this country as slaves, completely disconnected from their roots. And for generations, it was illegal for them to even learn how to read and write. And they're lacking that social equity they're beginning to acquire it now, just over the last few generations. But it's the reason why the average wealth of the white family in the United States is around $80,000, and the average wealth of an African-American family in America is around $5,000, you know, net wealth.
Right.
And it has to do with literally centuries of that social privilege. And the other thing you were talking about, my son and I were talking about this over the weekend, that it seems like the people who, the reason why you go to a good college, the reason why you go to Yale or Harvard isn't because you're going to get a better education there. It's a good education, but you can get a good education in a lot of colleges.
Right.
You go to college there because your roommate is going to grow up to be the CEO of a company that you may end up, you know, being on the board of, or vice versa. You go there for the connections. And there is an old boy network in this country, and it does perpetuate itself, and it is very hard to break into. And the higher you get up in the social ladder, the more rigid it is, and the harder, much harder it is to get into. And the only way that we're going to have the American dream, to create the America that we had for that 50 years when we were living in the New Deal before Reagan came along, is by helping people up into the middle class, where they can have contact, where they can literally, their kids can go to any college. They can plug themselves into that social network. And they can get to know people of other social classes, economic classes, background classes, and racial classes, groups, you know, whatever. And it's like giving them the bootstraps to lift themselves up by. And the insight that you have is tragically the insight that virtually every conservative I have ever debated these issues with completely lacks. Right. They will say, I brought myself up by my bootstraps. They don't get it. Go ahead.
Well, if I could just say one more thing. My husband, we're involved in this International Association of CEOs, and we have mm-hmm. speakers every month. And I have tried desperately to have, and it's been, really been in the last 10 or 15 years, it's gotten even worse. We used to be more balanced. They'd have kind of two points of views. Now, I mean, they just will not even allow, at least in our particular chapter, they don't even allow people with opposing viewpoints in. I mean, it's real. They control the conversation. It seems, at least lately, it seemed that way to me.
Yeah.
It's been very disappointing. I mean, I've even tried to say, please, let's have Tom Hartman come and somebody else from the other side. No.
Well, the old boy club
This is
why the Republicans are going to vote down the Buffett rule, even though the majority of Americans support it, because it's about the old boy network.
Right. And I'm not going to say everybody's like that. I mean, they're good people. I mean, but it's just, it can be very, just very.
Well, even good people are subject to social pressure. Even good people, understand that if they want to stay in the social class
in
they're in.
Yeah,
in the club.
Exactly.
There's the rules of the club, and it's unfortunate.
Right.
And those are the times when, I mean, there were good, there, you know, it's like the Masters, you know, what's the name of that club in Athens, Georgia? I think it's in Georgia, you know, where they play the big golf game, and women are not allowed as members. It's like at a certain point, somebody, you know, there's going to be a certain minimum threshold of members who finally say, no, we've got to do the right thing. But up until then, it's like everybody's afraid to say, no, it's time to do the right thing. So anyhow, Diane, thank you very much for the call. Thank you for getting it. It's for understanding and for sharing with other people, and for being such a great mom, sharing it being a good parent. Coming up next on the Tom Hartman Program, is it okay for hospitals to refuse to hire obese employees? I'll have a rumble with Carrie Lucas of the Independent Women's Forum, plus the best of the rest of the news and your calls right here on the Tom Hartman Program. Occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week for we the people. And don't forget, democracy begins with you. Get out there, get active, occupy something. I'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.